This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those exaggerations.
I couldn't imagine somebody like Osama bin Laden understanding the joy of Hanukkah.
And as you know, my position is clear. I'm a commander guy.
But I'm the decider.
Yeah, you're the decider. So how come Osama bin Laden's still running around? That's what we need to know here. Hey, welcome to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and we're broadcasting to you here from the upper left corner of the free speech zone we call America, right here live and direct from the great Pacific Northwest. And glad to have you here. Our phone number here is 866-5577-377. The email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. We're all here to talk about our day-to-day, paycheck-to-paycheck survival here in George W. Bush's neocon nightmare, and what we're going to do to restore our Constitution and repair America's moral standing in the world. And as always, I'm joined across the continent from all the way across the continent in Washington, D.C., with our engineer and board operators, Stevie.
Hello.
From London. Stevie.
All the way from
London. How's everything going for you today?
Absolutely super duper. Thank you, Double R. How are you today?
Doing great. We're having, out here in Portland, Oregon, we're having one of our first sunny days of the springtime, finally.
Oh, yeah?
Here in mid-April. So
wow.
I'm camped out here in the studios looking at the outside and the sun and the people having fun.
Well, you're sitting there in your dank, dark little basement talking to the rest
of
you. You see, listeners, you see what the Double R puts up with for you and for your benefit and your good. I was doing.
How are things out on the East Coast there? Looking good?
Oh yeah, very good. I was doing lots of research and stuff today as well. I had a movie night the other night, and so I watched Idiocracy, obviously.
Okay.
And
yes.
I also saw They Live, the old John Carpenter film with Roddy Piper.
Oh, if you have, yeah, is that your first time seeing that?
That was my first time watching They Live.
Oh. Oh, if you have not seen They Live, folks, if you're listening to me, if you can hear my voice, it's a John Carpenter movie from the 80s, and it features probably the best movie fight scene of all time.
Absolutely.
Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also one of the best lines ever.
Yeah.
I have come to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
It stars the wrestler, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
That's right.
Was the star of this film. And then that, I can't remember that woman's name. She has the ice blue eyes.
Yeah.
But, if you haven't seen that movie, go out, get it on your Netflix, go rent it, They Live. It's kind of a sci-fi thing about, how we're living in a matrix, sort of, and being run by the aliens that are poisoning our minds.
It was very strangely prophetic sitting there watching that, this film about the middle class all getting poorer, while the rich all get richer, and the media try and control our minds with word, where you see the word obey everywhere, and basically we're just being used as breeding for a slave race, while the aliens rip our planet to pieces for its natural resources. That was bizarre.
Yeah, it was. You know, who could have thought of such a thing?
How strange.
The aliens, they all kind of look like Dick Cheney too. That's the kind of scary thing about the show.
I didn't think of that, so
yeah,
absolutely right. Yeah, and so then naturally it led on to watching Idiocracy.
Well, of course it would. So anybody, you want to get yourself a good movie for the weekend, go out there and get your John Carpenter's They Live. It's definitely, if nothing else, just to see the fight scene. It's one of the best ones.
It really is.
Of all time.
It really is. And Roddy, we salute you. Hey, maybe President Ventura will give him a place in the cabinet.
Maybe so. A government of professional wrestlers couldn't be any worse than what we've been suffering through these past 7.5 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
At least we'd know the professional wrestlers were faking it, right?
I watched one more thing, being British, and I hadn't seen this before. I saw Casino Royale, the new version, not the good version with Peter Sellers in it.
Right.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I think James Bond's lost a lot of his debonair attitude. He's not quite as subtle as he used to be.
Yeah.
Or is it me?
No, I think you're on to something there. I think the James Bond's become a little coarser as time has gone on.
Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Even Timothy Dalton, to some extent, Pierce Brosnan, not so much George Lazenby, but he always had this very stylish, sophisticated attitude, even when he was bashing people's heads in. Daniel Craig just looks like the kind of guy who starts fights outside nightclubs called Sparkles or Gossips or something like that.
I think you've got something there. We'll keep our eyes on that. Now, there's a whole bunch of news stories we need to get to here today.
One final thing. It's a little surprise for a little surprise.
Oh,
for
yes.
In honor of watching that film, I made you a new bump to break. See what you think of it.
Okay.
America's own double R agent.
The name's Belville. Russ Belville.
Right, we're placing the country in your hands. And for God's sakes, try to bring it back in one piece this time.
From Portland with love, it's the Radical Russ Belville Show.
Hooray! Oh, yes. Oh, that's so sweet, Stevie. Gosh. And now I can never say that no immigrant ever did nothing for me.
I'll build your walls, I'll make your beds.
That's right. Well, we better get to it. We've got our news segment that we've got to get to here. You know, a lot of you are like me. You've got a full-time job or two that you're doing just to try to survive. So you don't always have the time to catch up on the newspaper or the evening news. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
The proof is in that the approval for torture was given at the highest levels of our government.
Any activity we conduct is within the law. We do not torture.
General Petraeus says we just need to stay in Iraq for 6 more months. Hey, isn't this my script from a year ago?
Come on, it's Victor Petraeus. Petraeus.
Barack Obama says that bitter Pennsylvania voters cling to their God and their guns. Pennsylvania's response? Protesters are disrupting the Olympic torch marathon to protest China's not-so-secret human rights record.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
Airlines ground thousands of flights for safety inspections. Hundreds of thousands of frustrated travelers exclaim,
"Surely you can't be serious."
"I am serious, and don't call me Shirley."
McCain-Feingold campaign finance lawbreaker John W. McCain cracks wise on American Idol.
American Idol is a lot like a presidential primary election, except for people who live in Michigan and Florida. Their votes actually count.
Speaking of Florida, teens in Florida believe drinking bleach and smoking pot will prevent pregnancy.
And I French kiss.
Everybody does that.
Yeah, but Daddy says I'm the best at it.
In Los Angeles, a gun was pried from cold, dead hands.
I have only 5 words for you. From my cold, dead hands.
And Americans prepare their last-minute tax returns for Tuesday's IRS deadline.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
That's right, April 15th, everybody's got to get their taxes in. A lot of you probably have done so ahead of the deadline in anticipation of the financial stimulus package. Oh, yeah, baby. $600, woohoo! Yeah, right, that's going to be a big, huge help. But I found some interesting little stats here about the tax money that you should know about. And before I get to that, let me also mention that we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up on the show. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to be talking with Jay Lakin, who's from the online gaming industry and wants to talk a little bit about internet gambling and some of the laws that have been passed in haste, thanks to the Patriot Act and such, and some of these other acts that have been passed and that were hardly read, and how that's affected the online gaming industry and what changes are being proposed. So we'll get to that in our next segment, in our Under the Radar segment. And also coming up a little bit later in Living in America, we're going to talk about the big pharmaceutical companies and how the Supreme Court is poised now to protect them over you if you happen to be killed by their drugs. Big surprise there, huh? And of course, Lunatic Fringe and the big story and all of that coming up a little bit later. But before we hit this first break, I want to talk about this tax time, because here's some interesting stats that you might want to know. When you're turning in your taxes, paying your federal taxes, you know, assuming you're not a corporation, because, you know, but assuming that you're one of us, the working class people of America who actually pay taxes, this is where your dollar of tax money is going. If we take the federal taxes that are collected and break it down by budgets and work it out to a dollar, this is where your money goes. 42.2 cents of your tax dollar is going straight to the military. 42 cents out of every dollar straight to the military. And over half of that, about 29 cents, goes for paying for this Iraq quagmire. So right there, you know, the 4 out of 10 dimes out of a dollar there going to the war and the military. 22 cents of your tax dollars go to pay for health care. Could be more, and we could get better results for it, that's for sure. 10 cents on every dollar is going to pay for the interest on the national debt. 10 cents just gone for interest. 8.7 cents is going for programs to help the poor. Now, of course, you know, maybe if the poor would just join the military, right? Is that the theory? Yeah, 8 cents for helping out the poor. 2.6 cents going toward environment, space, science, and technology. In this era of global warming and the possibility of drastic climate change that could wipe out most of the species, we're spending 2.6 cents out of every dollar on science, technology, space, and the environment. And 1 cent, one little penny, is the amount we spend on global diplomacy and foreign affairs. 1 cent. 1 cent for diplomacy, 42 cents for military and warfare. That kind of explains everything you need to know about the situation we're in right now. Well, let's go off to the break. When we come back, it's our Under the Radar segment. We'll be speaking with Jay Lakin. So stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the $1 million man.
Every week here at the Russ Belville Show, we sift through the headlines to find the stories buried in the back pages or ignored on the evening news. Stories our citizens and our leaders need to hear. In this segment, we go under the radar. All right, for our Under the Radar segment today, we got a guest joining us by telephone, Jay Lakin from Poker Source Online. Jay, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Russ, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem here. Now, this is kind of an under-the-radar segment for me as well, because I don't know a whole lot about the issue of internet gambling and gaming online. And, you know, I've played a couple of poker sites now and then just for fun, but it's not really something that I've done a whole lot of work in. And in doing some of the research for this segment, I pulled up some interesting facts here, and I hope I'll give these to the listeners, and then we'll talk about the issue here. First of all, online gambling started about 1995. There's about 2,000 internet gambling websites with various operations. Internet gambling was estimated about $5.9 billion back in 2005, and about 8 million gamblers gamble in the United States online. So, Jay, that's kind of the situation. That's the setup. And what is the problem the gaming industry is wanting to bring up in this situation?
Well, back in the waning moments of the 06 Congress, Russ, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act was tagged onto the Safe Ports Bill at the last minute by former Republican Senator Bill Frist. And what it did basically was prohibit the transfer of funds from financial institutions, banks, to internet gambling sites, basically shutting down the online gaming community in the U.S. Hypocritically enough, the Congress carved out fantasy sports, online lotteries, and horse racing from that bill, basically saying to Americans, we don't want you playing 1 cent, 2 cent Texas Hold'em on your laptop, but if you want to drop $1,000 on Seabiscuit to win in the third of the aqueduct, that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds ridiculous to me.
Yeah, no one has been able to explain to me why it is not okay to play poker on your laptop, but it is okay to bet on horse racing on your laptop.
Yeah, it's hypocritical. You know, I've always been of the mind that, you know, if people want to gamble, you know, we let them gamble. And just in general, I'm kind of anti-prohibition of any, you know, anything that people, you know, law-abiding citizens want to do with their own money and their own time.
Exactly.
Now, what is the state of the legality of internet gambling in America? I was looking up here. There were some notes here about the Wire Act from 1961 that supposedly prohibited gambling over the wires. How does that affect things?
Well, that's basically what Congress is using to try to put a stop to all this. But there are a couple of things that are going on. Number one, there are several states, about a dozen states, that have basically outlawed online gambling in total, but it's treated like jaywalking. But you have a state like Washington, close to you, I believe, which has made online gambling a Class C felony. That means that somebody playing poker on their laptop is treated the same as a child molester. Man, that's the kind of thing that's going on in this country. You can walk into any 7-Eleven and buy a lottery ticket. You can walk into any brick-and-mortar casino and drop thousands of dollars on craps or a slot machine. But if you want to play 1-cent, 2-cent Texas Hold'em on your laptop in the state of Washington, you can go to prison. It just doesn't
now,
make
how much
sense.
Of this do you suppose is generated by, like you said, the brick and mortar competition? Is this casinos, tribal casinos, and other industries trying to fight against the online for fear of the business?
Yeah, obviously, in the state of Washington, it was the tribal casinos that were behind the governor signing that bill prohibiting or outlawing basically online poker in the state. As far as the UIGEA and the carve out for sports, lotteries, and horse racing, that was basically lobbyists acting on behalf of their constituents. Unfortunately, the online poker sites aren't located in the U.S. They're in the U.K., they're in Malta, Gibraltar, Antigua, Costa Rica. They don't know how Washington works. They didn't know that they were supposed to pay, you know, $1,000 an hour lawyers to bribe Congress so that they could get their carve out as well. You know, they need to take them to lunch and fly them to Scotland for golf matches and all the other stuff they have to do.
Yeah, the way Washington works these days. Now, my only concern with the offshore gambling like this is the flow of money leaving the economy here in America and flowing out to someone else. Is there a patch or a fix that someone's trying to propose here that would protect both sides, both the legitimate entrepreneurs?
I'll tell you, Russ, I was in the Netherlands just last week, a meeting with all of the online poker sites. It was a online poker convention, basically. And every one of them have told me that if online gambling were legal in the States, they would move to the U.S. I mean, they don't want to be in the U.K. They don't want to be in Malta or Cyprus or Israel. I mean, they would like to set up shop in the U.S., but they can't because of the laws. You know, there's no reason why this money has to leave the U.S. There's billions of dollars a year that could be spent in this country, that could be taxed in this country, but you know, because of the UIGEA, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's what we find when we prohibit anything. We prohibit it. We prohibit prostitution. We prohibit drugs. People find a way to get them, and the money goes underground rather than getting us into our economy and through our tax revenues.
To speak on that a little bit more, the folks that are playing online poker in America have found a way to get around the UIGEA. They figured out a way to fund their account through a Canadian or an EU bank account, or they have friends living outside of the country that are transferring funds into their account. I mean, it's the guy sitting in the wheelchair in North Dakota who can't get into his car and drive to a brick-and-mortar casino that's being hurt by this. You know, the guy that just wants to spend a couple of hours a week playing poker online.
And of course, the more legitimate this could be, the more that we could keep it above ground, the more we could help people that might have gambling problems. You know, if the more we keep it above ground, the less harm we can do. And that's what we want to see is a reduction of harm. So we got to wrap things up here, Jay. We're speaking again with Jay Lakin from Poker Source Online. Where can people learn more about this issue and who can they contact to make a difference?
A couple of things they can do. They can obviously go online and they can Google online poker, online gambling, and read up what's going on. They can go to PokerPlayersAlliance.org, which is an organization that's trying to fight the UIGEA. And they can contact their congressperson and say, listen, I don't want you getting involved in my personal life and telling me what I can and can't do with my money in the privacy of my home.
That's as much a tribute to freedom as I can imagine, the freedom to be able to spend your money the way you want to. Jay Lakin, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back after this with our Living in America segment.
Your red state refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Ah, yes. Hello again. It's 35 after the hour, and you're listening to live weekend progressive talk for the average working class American from an average working class American. That's me, Radical Russ Belville. Our phone line here is 866-5577-377. You can call in, talk about any of the topics we're covering here on the show. And, of course, in this segment, we always like to get to... That's right. Neocon regressives say that we liberals hate America first. I like to say we liberals love America most. That's why we're so disappointed in how badly regressives trash her reputation and treat her people. So today we help our leaders focus on the plight of the little guy by taking our look at... Oh, yeah. Living in America today, we've got quite the subject for this one. It has a lot to do with... The government that's in charge of protecting you, that's right, you, the people of this great country, and specifically the FDA. Now, this is a story that hasn't gotten a lot of play, and this has to do with the drug manufacturers, specifically in this case Johnson & Johnson, being protected by their buddies in the Bush administration. Now, you all are quite aware of the fact that the Bush administration has put more foxes in charge of hen houses in this government than ever before. You know, we get the oil company execs in charge of energy policy and the mining company execs in charge of mine safety and et cetera, et cetera. This is just another one of those situations, but I thought it bared a little description here on the show. There was this Johnson & Johnson patch that was for birth control, and it was called OrthoEvra. And this OrthoEvra patch was made, you know, to make birth control a little more easy for women, you know, not having to remember to take a pill. You can put on a patch, and it would slowly release estrogen into the bloodstream to act, you know, in as a birth control method. So they approved this patch. The FDA approves this patch in 2001. Now, women go through and they buy this patch. It's very, very successful. You know, it's very convenient for women. So they had tons and tons of prescriptions for this patch, up to 900,000 prescriptions by March of 2004. So a huge success for Johnson & Johnson. Well, problems start to come up because the FDA starts to get these reports of women dying from this patch. Yes, 50 different reports of death from the OrthoEvra patch from 2002 to 2006. And the reason why has to do with the estrogen that's being released into their bloodstreams. See, when there's too much estrogen released, what happens is this increases a woman's risk of blood clotting, and that increased risk of blood clotting can lead to heart attack or stroke. Now, the FDA puts limits on this, okay, sensibly, of course, put limits on how much estrogen can be released into a woman's bloodstream, and that limit was established in 1988. It was limited at 50 micrograms, 50 micrograms. So the limit's 50. You can't have a birth control pill or any sort of birth control that releases more than that. It's just too dangerous. So Johnson & Johnson is putting together this OrthoEvra patch. Now, remember, this patch comes out in 2001. They're testing it in 1999. 2 years before it gets approved by the FDA. They're testing it in 1999 and found out that this patch was releasing 76 micrograms of estrogen, right? So 26 over the limit, you know, almost 50% higher, more than 50% higher than the limit that the FDA had set. However, Johnson & Johnson did a little fudging with the numbers, did a little math here to kind of fudge the numbers a little bit, and so they ended up mislabeling how much micrograms of estrogen would go out in this patch, mislabeled it by 40%, right? Brought it down underneath the limit that they're supposed to make. So Johnson & Johnson knew that this was deadly, that it had, you know, way too much estrogen, but fudged the numbers and mislabeled it. And they've admitted in court now to mislabeling. They say, yes, we were wrong about that. It was releasing more estrogen than we expected. Now, not only did this happen in 1999, but also they studied it again. These Johnson & Johnson people studied again in 99 again, and they restudied it in 2003 and discovered that, yes, indeed, this thing was a problem. So in 1999, they know that it's got too much estrogen, but they lie on the numbers, get it passed by the FDA in 2001. By 2002, the FDA starts getting these reports of women dying from blood clots that caused heart attacks and strokes. By 2003, Johnson & Johnson restudies it again and finds out that it's causing problems for women. And so when does the FDA get around to warning the public? November of 2006. So in a span of 3 years since they knew for sure for the third time that this was killing women, 3 years later, they get around to letting us all know. And of course, this had a huge effect on the prescriptions for this Ortho Evra patch. Went down from 900,000 prescriptions in March of 04 down to 187,000 prescriptions in February of 08. So the public reacted. When the public had the information, the true information, they ran away from that prescription and, of course, hurt the bottom line. And this was all coming out of the New York Times, and there was this very telling part about this, is that the guy who was there at a trial, he was at a trial for a different drug, but his name's Dr. John Geregian, I think is how it's pronounced. He was a scientist who worked at FDA for about two decades. And this is the quote from the paper. He testified that the agency did not always ask for strong warnings, even if it believed a drug was risky. Companies typically oppose warnings, and the agency knows it must compromise on its requests or face years of delay. And what that's getting to is that the FDA does not study these new drugs in any major detail. They rely on the companies themselves to test the drugs and then forward their results to the FDA so that they can make a decision on whether or not that drug is going to be approved. So you got that? The government that's charged with protecting you from harmful drugs relies on reports from the makers of those drugs. And according to this doctor who worked at the FDA, even when they do get information that says they want to have a strong warning, they're reluctant to go forward with it because there would be delays from the companies. The companies here are in charge. You get it, folks? It's all about the profit, you know? It's all a cost-benefit analysis. How long can we keep selling this birth control patch before enough people die before they'll make us do something about it? So that's the situation we're in right now. Now, I brought you up to this point to explain the news aspect of this is what is happening, is that the Supreme Court, our beloved Roberts 5-4 conservative Supreme Court, is set to rule on some cases that would shield these drug companies like Johnson & Johnson from lawsuits from the families of the women and from the women themselves who were injured by these faulty drugs. So the Supreme Court believes that the FDA is the only agency with enough expertise to regulate the drug makers, and that since the FDA approved it, you can't really blame Johnson & Johnson if someone got hurt by it. Okay? So the FDA makes its rules based on what Johnson & Johnson tells them about the patch. But if Johnson & Johnson deflates their numbers by 40% so they can get the patch approved, and the FDA goes ahead and was fooled by it and it gets approved, then the women who were killed by it can't sue Johnson & Johnson. Even though Johnson & Johnson knew this could kill women. They knew it in 99, they knew it in 2003, but because they were able to pull a fast one on the FDA, the Supreme Court wants to make it legal for them to be able to get away with it and not be sued. Is that just amazing? The lawyers from Johnson & Johnson came right out and said it. This is one of their lawyers, a fellow by the name of John Winter, says, quote, "The FDA is responsible for making those decisions. And their whole point is that the patient should not be allowed to sue the company, Johnson & Johnson, because the FDA approved the patch and the labeling on the packaging. So since the FDA was fooled by Johnson & Johnson, the Supreme Court wants to make it impossible for these women to be able to sue for damages." This is the kind of world we're left in right now. This is the logical extension of what happens when you put all of these laissez-faire, free market capitalist neocons in charge who don't believe in government, who believe that government is evil and that it's the cause of all the problems. They put all their cronies in charge of all of these regulatory agencies that are charged with protecting the American people, and they're not. They're protecting the bottom line. You don't matter, folks. It's all about the green. Well, I'm Radical Russ. That's the story that we're taking for Living in America there. And if you've got any comments or questions about that Ortho Evra story or any other stories regarding the drug industry out there, I'd love to hear them. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. And when we come back from our break, of course, we're going to turn over to Stevie's favorite segment, the Lunatic Fringe Award. Stay tuned.
Yay!
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Welcome back to the show. It's 49 after the hour, and you're listening to the weekend home of the working class survivors of George W. Bush's neocon nightmare. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality. From the Guano Loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents the Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. And you know, we do this every week because, well, it needs to be done. Somebody needs to keep an eye on these guys, and your time is valuable. You don't have the time to listen to right-wing radio, so I do it for you and catch a lot of these guys. And Stevie, you know, this time I got something special because, you know, we pick out all these guys and gals sometimes for the Lunatic Fringe. And I always feel bad because there's usually about five of them. We get four guys that don't win and one who wins. And I just felt bad for the other four.
Because they try so hard, don't they?
They do.
They really
do. I mean, coming up with this kind of lunatic fringery is not easy after week. So I've decided to give them some consolation prizes this week. And I hope you enjoy. So we're going to start off with one of the right wingers on the right wing radio dial, Neil Bortz. Yeah, you remember Neil Bortz? We talked about Bortz before. Yeah. Oh, excuse me, a little indigestion there. Yeah, Neil Bortz was on the air talking about hard work and how he would be really bad as a Mexican because he wouldn't be able to do this sort of hard work. Listen in.
Like I told you the other day, I would make a lousy Mexican. Well, because I wanted to scrub the hangar floor the other day, so I went and rented one of these big buffers, and it damn near killed me. It was dragging me across the hangar floor. You know, that's skilled labor. That's skilled labor, folks. Okay, we'll be back.
I think with this Rosetta Stone software, you know, Spanish language software, I think the first phrase they teach you is hands against the car and the hood and spread them.
Yeah, so that's our understanding of our of our Hispanic friends from Neil Bortz, that he would be a lousy Mexican because he can't run a floor buffer, and the first words that you learn in Rosetta Stone software is hands against the car and hood and spread them.
And from that clip there, I think maybe he should get the English Rosetta Stone.
Maybe he should. No, his prize for today, I decided to award him the Lousy Mexican Award.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
So, yeah, you can't get much more lousy Mexican than that. I think I just killed my ad chances from Taco Bell, but all right. So we turn to another one of these guys out there on the Fox Noise channel. This one's John Gibson. You may know John Gibson, the pale-faced guy with the white kind of bouffant hair on Fox, John Gibson. He was talking about Barack Obama, and he was speaking with one of his callers, an African-American caller, and John Gibson has a theory as to why this African-American caller is sticking by Barack Obama.
You are the third or fourth caller in a row who has identified yourself to Christine as African-American. And when I talk to you, you obviously are smart, well-educated, well-read and all that. And I think that your loyalty to Obama here is an issue that goes beyond the issues.
It is a racial solidarity
bond you have with Obama. Tell me, I dare you to deny that. You're sticking with Obama because he's a brother.
He's sticking with Obama because he's a brother. And you know, when I look at John Gibson, I did not realize that John Gibson knew so much about brothers, that he was so in tune with the African American community. So that I decided that today he deserves the Undercover Brother Award. Yeah, John Gibson, that's about as close as he's going to get. Unfortunately, he doesn't win the award today for Lunatic Fringe. We're going to go now to Pat Robertson. You remember Pat Robertson from the 700 Club. This is Pat dishing on Islam.
Well, we've been saying it, but it looks like the political correctness in our society won't let you say it. They make fun of people who speak out boldly against Islam. But I want to say it again and again and again. Islam is not a religion. It is a political system bent on world domination. Not a religion. It masquerades as a religion, but the religion covers a worldwide attempt to exercise power and to subjugate the world to their way of thinking.
Islam is a political movement that seeks to subjugate the world into its way of thinking. Nothing like Christian missionaries going all over the world. Nothing like it. Completely different. But Pat Robertson doesn't get our award for the day. We're going to go to one of our favorites here, Michael Wiener Savage. Yeah, Mr. Wiener Savage. Talking again about Barack Obama.
Look who we inherited in this country, from Dwight D. Eisenhower to Barack Hussein Obama. In one generation, a war hero who commanded the Allied operations against Nazi Germany, was running for the presidency then. Now we have an unknown stealth candidate who went to a madrasas in Indonesia and in fact was a Muslim, despite what Straw here will tell you on softball. Yes, check it out.
Yeah, repeating the same Barack Hussein Obama madrasas. Yeah, he went to a secular madrasa, you know, which is a contradiction in terms. It's kind of like saying, you know, right-wing wisdom. So this has been debunked so many times, it's not even worth giving him an award for it, but he's going to keep going on it. And I just like to point out that if we go back to the good old days that Michael Savage is talking about, back in the days of Dwight D. Eisenhower, then Savage wouldn't have to worry about Barack Obama running for office. He'd still be drinking from the colored water fountain. But Michael doesn't win our award for today. I've got to give this one to the crew at Morning Joe, who just could not handle the idea of the transgendered man who is now pregnant.
See, the deal is when she had the surgery.
I don't want to know the deal.
She kept, became a man, but kept the parts. You not only don't want to cover your eyes, but now your ears when you hear.
I don't want to hear. I'm going to be sick. If he's the mother, who's the father?
The parrot at the pet shop.
Willie,
I really do feel sick.
Well, disgust.
Come on, you're
happy. I'm upset.
Happiness comes in different shapes and sizes.
Are the groupies involved in this in any way?
All right, well, Willie, that was not only stupid and useless, but quite frankly,
maybe
disgusting.
To you.
Stupid, useless, disgusting. I'm going to be sick. All because a transgendered man is having a baby. I think it was a little bit overreaction there, and that's definitely some lunatic fringery. So I've got to give it to them. So Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, for demonstrating the maturity of second graders and the class of Fred Phelps, you're the winners of this week's Lunatic Fringe. You know, this is this story of the pregnant man here, and this is from my home state here in Oregon. And we'd talked about this briefly last week, and I just want to correct any sort of a misperception someone might have had about that. We're not saying Lunatic Fringe has anything to do with the man getting pregnant. I think it's an amazing story. I think it's fabulous. You know, the more loving couples that want to have children and raise them in a loving, stable family, I think that's a wonderful thing. That's a great thing. And for Brzezinski and Scarborough here to be saying it's disgusting, it's not disgusting. It's just different. It's just something new. I can't open your minds a little bit here. Try to wrap your mind around it. It's not that big a problem. And these people that are saying the kids are going to need therapy or something like that, get over yourself. These kids will handle it just fine. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to be back in the next hour with more news and information you can use. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Our country is at war, and our government has the obligation to protect the American people. Anything we do to that effort, to that end, in this effort, any activity we conduct is within the law. We do not torture.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. Yeah, welcome to the Russ Belleville Show, and we're broadcasting to you here from the free speech zone we call America, up here in the upper left corner, the Pacific Northwest, live and direct from Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the show. As always, we're joined behind the boards all the way across the continent in Washington, D.C., by Stevie Lee, our immigrant from London. Stevie, welcome to the show yourself.
Thank you, sir. Hands across the country. And they're very,
that's
very
right.
Long hands. Kind of like Marilyn Manson's hands. Just very long.
Really long hands. That's right. The amazing intercontinental communications technology at work to bring you progressive talk.
You should see the piece of string between the two cans that we've got to talk to each other here. It is amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, and the little tag there from Dick Cheney listening in somewhere in Wyoming.
That's why.
Well, let's get right to it. Well, we got a lot of stuff to cover here, so let's get right to it.
Now it's time for the big story.
Oh my! What a big story you have.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
Yeah, the big story that came out this week was the ABC News undercover investigation that has proven here that top officials in the Bush administration, people known as the Principals Group, signed off on the torture techniques that were used in places like Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo and God knows how many other places that were torturing people. Yeah, it went all the way up to Dick Cheney, signed off on using these harsh interrogation techniques against suspected terrorists after asking the Justice Department to endorse their legality.
I haven't seen it. We don't torture.
Uh-huh. And so the reason that, of course, President Bush had not seen it, according to the report, is that they took care to insulate the president from a series of meetings where the CIA discussed waterboarding, which simulates drowning, according here to the AP story. But, of course, we all know that it does not simulate drowning. It is drowning. Drowning is a verb that means to inhale water into your lungs, and that's exactly what happens when people are waterboarded. It's not some sort of interrogation technique. It's a torture technique that dates back to the Spanish Inquisition.
Inquisition.
And we certainly don't expect it in our constitutional republic. Now, these were being held in the years following 2001. This was in 2002 and 2003. And the Justice Department put out those memos, and we've been hearing a lot about those memos. We talked about them last week, the Bybee memo that said that torture had to inflict something equivalent to organ failure or death. And, of course, the U torture memos that have just come out that said that basically in a time of war, the president can do anything he wants to. And these meetings were being held in our White House, with the Attorney General at the time, John Ashcroft, the Secretary of State at the time, Colin Powell, the CIA Director, George Tenet, you know, Mr. Medal of Freedom, and the National Security Advisor at the time, Condoleezza Rice. And they were running the torture the program. It goes all the way up to the top, and to the point where they had done so many of these meetings and talked about exactly what types of slaps and pushes and sleep deprivation and waterboarding they were going to use on people that it went so close that they actually reviewed some of the interrogations, and it was almost like a script, as if they had written a script to waterboard these people and to abuse these people. And it's just the sickest thing to know that this goes all the way to the top. And the thing that's sicker, in my mind, is that I have to have some sort of a tiny shred of respect for John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft was quoted in this report saying, quote, "Why are we talking about this in the White House? History will not judge this kindly." No, it will not judge it kindly, and you know who should be judging it is a war crimes trial at The Hague. What is it going to take for us, the American people, to stand up to these law-breaking, treasonous bastards that are shredding our Constitution? What is it going to take? I mean, we had Nancy Pelosi taking impeachment off the table the minute they got elected in 2006. If impeachment's off the table, why should these guys worry about what they're doing? They're going to cover it all up. Bush is going to pardon everybody, and who knows, maybe in the last minute he'll resign for 20 minutes so Cheney could pardon him. They're all going to get pardoned, they're all going to go on, and they're all going to get away with it. I'm sick of them getting away with it, folks. I am tired of them not having to stand up and be held accountable for the crimes against our Constitution and against the good name of America. You know, you want to talk about patriotism. Patriotism is standing up for the Constitution. When George W. Bush stood up on there on that podium, swearing in for his oath of office, he didn't swear to protect the American people. He didn't swear to use whatever technique he had to do to protect the American people. He swore to protect protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's what his job is. And he swore on a Bible to protect the Constitution. He did not swear on the Constitution to protect the Bible. That's my other pet peeve with that issue. You know, it's about time that we stood up and did something about this. It's about time that we instigated some war crimes trials against these guys. It's probably not going to happen here in America. We got to hope for international agencies here to put this out. And I just want to know your opinion on this. And the phone number here is 866-5577-377. Should these guys be brought up on war crimes charges? And if so, would you support their extradition to these countries to be tried? Or is it a bad idea? Is it a bad idea for us to be going on with war crimes trials? Should we just pull a Jerry Ford and say, oh, well, let bygones be bygones. Let's not disturb the national psyche by digging too deeply into these high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, you know my opinion on that, but I want to hear yours. The phone number is 866-5577-377. And in another story here that I thought deserved a little bit of attention, it turns out that Osama bin Laden has released a new videotape. Jeez, the guy is like Tupac, man. He releases a tape every couple of months or so. But yeah, Osama bin Laden, you know, the guy that George W. Bush is not that interested in.
I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah, Osama bin Laden has released a new tape. And in this new tape, the CIA's confirmed that it's most likely him. He says all sorts of interesting things, and I just want to get your take on how you think the Republicans are going to use this in the upcoming elections. Bin Laden says that we are continuing this policy in bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy. He points out that they did this same sort of thing to the Soviet Union and Afghanistan in the 1980s using guerrilla warfare and the war of attrition to fight tyrannical superpowers. Bin Laden notes that we bled Russia for 10 years until it went bankrupt and was forced to withdraw in defeat. And so Bin Laden is out there mocking us. He's gotten everything he wanted. You know, Bin Laden wanted the American troops out of Saudi Arabia. Bush took the American troops out of Saudi Arabia. Bin Laden thought that we weren't charged, that the oil being taken away from the Arab lands was being taken away too cheaply. And so what do you know? Oil's up to $110 a barrel. Gas is approaching $4. And he also wanted to bankrupt the United States and drag the United States into an intractable quagmire in the Middle East. And lo and behold, he succeeded at that too. Bin Laden goes on to point out how easy it was to get us to fall for his trick. He said all he had to do was to raise a piece of cloth on which is written Al-Qaeda in order to make generals race there to cause America to suffer the human, economic, and political losses without their achieving anything of note other than some benefits for their private corporations. Bin Laden cited a British estimate that it cost Al-Qaeda about $500,000 to carry out the attacks on September 11th. And Bin Laden goes on to say, quote, every dollar of Al-Qaeda defeated $1 million by the permission of Allah, besides the loss of a huge number of jobs, as the economic deficit reached astronomical numbers estimated to more than $1 trillion. And so Bin Laden is just detailing every single thing that has happened here, that he's dragged us into a war. It's causing us human losses, 4,000 troops and how many more hundreds, thousands, contractors, Iraqi civilians, economic and political losses, nothing to gain but for our private corporations. And he concludes by saying, the real loser is you. It is the American people and their economy. So that's the Bin Laden speech that's out, and I can just hear the Republican attack ads already in my head. I can already hear them saying whenever Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, whichever one becomes the nominee, whenever they get up there and they say, hey, you know, this is bankrupting our country, they're going to come back and say, see, you liberals, you're saying the same things Osama's saying. See, Osama said, you believe, you agree with Osama. So is this a preemptive strike by Bin Laden here to try to ensure that John McCain can somehow win the nomination by trying to put out a speech that echoes many of the attack ads from the Democrats, from the campaigns there? Something to think about. Do you think bin Laden's paying attention to our elections? Do you think bin Laden wants Mr. 100 Years War, Mr. John McCain, in the Oval Office to continue bankrupting America? Again, I want to know what you think. The phone number is 866-55-77-377. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee. We'll be right back after these short commercial messages.
Call Radical Russ now, 866-557-7377. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Yes, it is, and welcome back. It's 21 after the hour, and I'm Radical Russ, here to take our country back one person at a time every weekend. Remember, it's still we the people, not we the corporations. So let's turn things over to the good and wise people of North America and hear your voices. Let's stand up together and fight the power. Let our leaders know how we feel. Yes, it's about time to give the people what they want. And what we want is trials for war crimes here. We're talking about the torture that the memos here, or the investigation that shows that the approval for the torture programs went all the way up to the vice president's office. We got a lot of calls to get to here. So let's start off with Desiree in Montclair, New Jersey. Desiree, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So war crime trials, what do you think we ought to do about this this new revelation? Doesn't it just sicken you?
Well, even before this new revelation, which I'm glad it did come to light, but I think it's our duty to. I don't think we have a choice not to. I mean, we have to prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law, or in a way we're just as guilty. We have to. I mean, there's no other way to think about it. I mean, they're sending our children over there, and this is the precedent they've set. So any war going forward, our children are going to be tortured, period, hands down. It's going to happen. But they're so rich and fat and in a way from the true people of America that they don't even understand it. I don't think they care to understand it. And I think that they are, as sick as this is, so proud of themselves.
I think they are. I think that they had set this up, you know, and when it goes this high up into the administration, you got to think that, you know, what was their idea? What did they think they would accomplish through this torture? Did they really think that the torture was going to work? Or was it just some sort of sick, you know, punishment for our enemies?
And it takes a special mind, in my opinion, to even think about torture and then to act on torture. And yet these special-minded people are running our country, and we're allowing them to do it, and it sickens me. I'm embarrassed. Yeah. I'm ashamed.
Yeah, I know how you feel, Desiree. And you know, Michelle Obama got in trouble for saying she was, you know, that she'd just now become proud of America. But I think I understand the sentiment.
Yeah, I'm not proud of America, and I will say out loud, I am not proud of America. I still love it, but I'm not proud of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when our children disappoint us, and this is a very minor example to this, but we're not proud of our children's behavior at all times. Do we love our children? Yeah. But at this point in time,
exactly.
I am ashamed of America. I am ashamed of the fact that we have not put these people in jail and nationalized it. I don't understand it. Like, what more do we need evidence-wise to proceed? What more do we need?
So do you think, what do you think the next administration, you think the next administration will take this up, or are they just going to bury it?
In my honest, humble opinion, I think they're going to bury it, no matter who's in office. And I only say that because Barack, for one, is going to have a tough time moving left or right anyway. You know what I mean? And I've always said, you know, for him to even order a pencil, he's going to have proof of purchase, order, approval, requisition. They're not going to let that man do anything without it being fully exposed, fully analyzed. I think Hillary has too many friends to really proceed with it, because she's going to burn some of her own friends if she really goes after this the way she should. And I think McCain, the same thing. Yeah. Same thing.
Well, the only thing that can make a difference here is if we can get all the people here in America to stand up and call their Congress. The phone number is 202-224-3121 and scream bloody murder about this. We've got to get this changed here. Desiree, thanks for your call. I really appreciate that. And if I may paraphrase a great American, it's time that we judge our country not by the color of its flag, but by the content of it, of its actions. And based on the actions of America lately, I think Desiree's right. There's not a whole lot to be proud of. Let's move on to the to Chattanooga, Tennessee. We're going to speak with David here. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing good so far.
Yeah, I have to agree with the last caller. It's like I want to know where all the people. I want to know where all the people are that were law and order and character people. They all seem to disappear into the woodwork and just not standing up and doing the right thing.
Yeah, where were all those people that were shouting for Bill Clinton's head when he dared to have a consensual affair in the White House?
That's right. Yeah, I just think as far as the war crimes go, I mean, we've actually tortured people and murdered them in our prisons. If that's not a crime, I don't know what is. And everyone should be held accountable for it.
And that's what we've got to do. Definitely. Thank you, David, for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go down to Denison, Texas. Now we got Mike in Denison, Texas. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for the great show. I just wanted to say, you know, my blood's been boiling for years, and I just can't I just can't tolerate and stand the hypocrisy anymore. Of, you know, we're a nation of laws and not of men. I would really, really like to see an international coalition of petitioners, you know, march upon The Hague and to lay down indictments on this band of criminals. I mean, you know, we have to do this lest we see a lot more of this in the future by our government at the hands of our so-called elected officials. You know, and I really don't believe that there's going to be any action on any part of the Congress or new incoming administration, regardless of, you know, the gender. I really believe that with the corporate influence of money in our country, we have to go far beyond our national borders, since the crimes themselves transcend national borders. We have to take this to an international arena where the neocon influence cannot corrupt the process. There is no process left in this country anymore, in my belief, that hasn't already seen the corrosive effects of money, influence, and power. We need to take this to a higher level and make sure that these criminals cannot hide from the long arm of law. If so, they need to be rendered back to this nation to face the crimes that they've committed and to face the people that they've harmed. And they really need to feel the full effect of their hypocrisy for a change and do the time. You know, if you can't do the crime,
let's get these guys this time. I mean, a lot of these guys are the same guys that were floating around during the Nixon administration with illegal wars in Cambodia. Some of these are the same guys who are floating around in the Reagan administration with illegal wars down in South America. What's it going to take for Americans to learn our lesson that we've got to prosecute these guys? They're like cockroaches. You got to wipe them out, or they'll breed. They get in all the dark corners and breed.
Well, amen to all of that, but, you know, it also transcends party, too. You know, we see a lot of wink, wink, nod, nod on both sides of the aisle, and that's why I believe it has to be taken to a much higher level. And with those comments of mine, I really do appreciate the access and the time. Thank you, Russ.
Hey, no problem, Mike. Thanks a lot. Yeah, it does happen on both sides of the aisle. And one of the things I try to do here on the show is to be, you know, to keep my eyes open and not to get, you know, forgive any hypocrisy on the Democratic side. But, you know, the Democratic side is peewee baseball compared to these major leaguers. I mean, once we clean up that mess and drain the swamp a little bit, then we can start talking about problems with the Democrats. I'm Radical Russ, and we're coming back in the next segment here with the free-for-all. Your calls at 866-5577-377. Any topic you want to talk about. This is the Russ Belville Show.
First time caller? That's okay. He's a first time radio host. The winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
That's right, it's time for our free-for-all segment. Whatever you want to get off your chest.
Free-for-all and hide us in. You can bet your life. Stakes are high and so am I. It's in the air tonight.
That's right. It's a free-for-all. Anything you want to get off your chest here. The phone number is 866-5577-377. No topic off limits, whatever you want to discuss. And I'll open up the segment here by discussing something I thought was quite quite a story here. It comes out of Florida, of course. That's where all your fun stories come from, right? This one come out of Florida, and it has to do with their sex education down there in Florida, or the lack thereof. In Florida, they've been doing the abstinence-only sex education, basically the just say no of sex education, you know, turning to 13, 14, 15-year-old boys and girls who are raging with hormones and pubescence and saying, no, just don't do it. yeah, that really works. And of course, all of the studies that have come in on this abstinence education have proven that it does not provide the teens the tools they need to stay healthy, right? Because, you know, kids are going to do it, right? They're going to do the deed. And what are we going to do? Are we going to provide our kids with some correct information on how to protect themselves from diseases and how to prevent unwanted pregnancies? No, we'll just say no. Well, this is the way it's been going in Florida for years now,
no.
And there's been this So there's been this report that come out of Florida where they surveyed the teenagers in Florida to ask them their attitudes and beliefs about sex, you know, to see, all right, well, let's see how this abstinence stuff's working. When they got this report back, they found a significant percentage of these kids that had all sorts of crazy ideas about how sex really worked. And one of them was they believed that if they drank Mountain Dew, that a shot of Mountain Dew would prevent pregnancy. I assume they mean drinking it. They also mentioned that swallowing a capful of bleach will prevent HIV/AIDS. This is what the kids in Florida believe. And finally, that they believe that smoking marijuana will prevent pregnancy somehow, which I guess explains why the Rastafarians died out, right? Uh-huh, sure. This is the natural consequence. This is not any sort of surprise that kids are believing this, because it's the natural consequence of prohibitionary attitudes, both with respect to sexual education and with respect to drugs. I mean, for years, we've been pumping our kids full of these reefer madness lies, you know, telling these things like, you know, if they smoke marijuana, they'll lose their mind and shoot their friend with a gun, and they'll contribute to terrorism and run over girls in drive-thrus, and just all this terrible stuff that's going to happen from smoking pot. And one of the things that they used to always tell them is that smoking pot could cause infertility. So is it any surprise when you tell the kid the lie about smoking pot causing infertility, that, and then you don't tell them anything about how to prevent pregnancy, that they're going to put one and one together there and say, hey, you know, you will smoke a little weed and that'll prevent the pregnancy? Well, so this is what we're leaving our kids to, is ignorance and lies about both sex and drugs. And it's just about time. Excuse me? It's just about.
Hey, you can rewrite it if that's what you feel like doing.
Yeah, exactly. And is this Kimberly?
Yeah, this is Kimberly.
Hi, Kimberly. You kind of jumped in on.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know we had a call.
There, Kimberly.
Sorry, that's live.
You jumped in.
Yeah,
there.
That's live radio, man. That's the way it works. So we're talking with Kimberly here in Fort Irwin, California. So Kimberly, welcome to the show. And
I think you're exactly right. Fort Irwin. I'm near Fort Irwin, which is really the middle of nowhere. But yeah.
Okay. So you had a subject you wanted to bring up about military pay cuts. Let's talk about that a little bit.
My husband works out here as an advisor. He's also a Vietnam vet, and he served in Iraq. And currently, and they don't want to hear anything a Vietnam vet has to say, you know. The big contractors out here, Raytheon, General Dynamics, just recently some of the civilians who are older and a lot of them are Vietnam vets, were asked to take a 10-15% pay cut so that it could go into the hands of Raytheon and General Dynamics. When he first came out here, they couldn't find the money to pay a lot of these people. You know, for like the first month, they were actually paying them to work for them until they got it together. You know, one of the things I think that could really help this situation is a draft, because it teaches people... there are consequences. It teaches them structure. You know, then people don't get to be spoiled rich brats. I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting point there.
You know,
let's bring that up to the rest of the listeners here about this. I've heard this been circulating in a couple of different blogs that I read about the idea that we should reinstitute the draft, because what's going on right now is that only the military, the very few members of the volunteer military, are having to have any sacrifice for this war, and because we don't have a shared sacrifice, it allows the war to continue and continue. Is that what you're getting at?
It's not affecting enough of people's lives. You know. You know, people think Jack Bauer, a TV character, well, he was the inspiration for a lot of these war criminals, you know, doing the torture documents. And when you get people who don't have to serve their country in any way, who get to sit there and listen to these people just spout off what they think, to have no respect for the Geneva Convention, to rewrite history as they see it, when they feel like it, I think a draft, getting people to serve and to get out there and put the shoe on the other foot, might bring some of this home. As you can see, have a lot to say.
That's great. Thank you, Kimberly, for your call. I appreciate it. That's a really good point. Let's bring that up to all the listeners here. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. Let's talk about Kimberly's point there about the draft. Is it something that we should bring back? You know, I know on one side they'll talk about how even when we did have a draft, the whole country didn't really have to suffer. I mean, the rich and well-connected got away. I mean, George W. Bush got to go work on campaigns while he was supposed to be in the National Guard, and Dick Cheney got his 5 deferments, and Rush Limbaugh got his deferments. I mean, all these neocon chicken hawks that are in power right now, they all managed to get away without having to suffer and sacrifice in those previous wars. And so, we had it. We used to have a draft. A lot of people say that the draft was instrumental in ending the Vietnam War because of the shared sacrifice. But is it the right direction to go? I mean, is it the right thing to do, regardless of what the effect would be? You know, even if it did successfully bring people to opposing the war more strongly, is it right to draft people? Is it a form of slavery to draft people? Or instead, is it just a form of shared sacrifice? Is this something like, you know, there's plenty of other countries in this world, Israel comes to mind, where there's a required sacrifice for all young men, young men and young women, to serve 2 years either in their country's military or in some sort of equivalent service. You know, I have all sorts of opinions on this. One opinion I really haven't made up my mind yet on this, and this is why I'm asking our listeners here. On the one hand, I do see the idea of shared sacrifice. I do agree with that idea that we all need to hold ourselves to a higher ideal and work for the common good. And part of that is through service to our country. I was in the National Guard. I don't think the military, though, is for everyone. And I understand people that are conscientious objectors and such. Should we have a requirement for a draft? Should there be compulsory service in this country? That's what I want to know. Good, the bad, is it right to do it? If it is right to do it, would it even be successful in helping to end this war? I think it's an interesting question. We'll take your calls on this in the last segment at 866-5577-377. And before we end this segment, I just wanted to bring up some stuff about George W. Bush here. He's been talking, and Dave Petraeus and all these cats are up on Capitol Hill testifying about the Iraq quagmire. And they're trying to trumpet all these successes. They're trying to say, well, we're going to reduce the amount of time the troops serve in the field from 15 months down to 12 months. Well, first of all, that only kicks in for the people after August 1st. So the soldiers already there serving 15 months are going to still have to serve their 15 months. And cutting it down from 15 to 12 just brings it back down to where it should be, 12 months on, 12 months off. And some people say that it should be 12 months on, 24 months off if we really want to maintain this surge or this occupation as we're maintaining it. Also, they're talking about bringing the troop drawdown maybe down to 140,000 troops to the end of 2008, and that's supposedly a drawdown of 25%. Well, yeah, after you increased it by 33%, now you're going to decrease it by 25%. We're not fooled out here. Oh, boy. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee. We'll be right back in just a few minutes for our last segment. We got some phone calls hanging on the line, so stay tuned. We'll get to your calls here at 866-5577-377.
America's own double R agent.
The name's Belville. Russ Belville.
Right, we're placing the country in your hands. And for God's sakes, try to bring it back in one piece this time.
From Portland with love, it's the Radical Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. It's 50 after the hour with our new musical break by our own, our favorite immigrant worker, Stevie.
I try.
Thanks, Stevie, for the... some beautiful work, man. Now, get back out there and build that fence.
Yes, sir.
Let's go back to the phones here. We were talking about a draft. Would this help? You know, we got 4,000 American soldiers plus who have passed away in this Iraq quagmire. You know, billions of our dollars going into a black hole out there. And yet we're still in the middle of this war. We got the Democrats in charge. They still wouldn't pull the plug on the war. Would a draft help this? And I want to go to the phones here to Austin, Texas. We got Julie in Austin, Texas. Is it time to bring back a draft, Julie?
I don't think so, no. I think.
All right, tell us why.
I think people should choose whether they would like to serve this country or not. I think that is part of the reason for the world that the United States, the world that we live in today here. I just feel like it is a free country, and I think they should choose to serve their country or not. And
I think that's a good point, and here's something I'd like to run by you, Julie, and I'll run this by everybody else who's listening, too. You know, yes, America's a free country, and we do not have involuntary servitude, and in my mind, a draft where you force someone to serve is a form of involuntary servitude. That's my first thing against it. But here, let me run this by you. You know, as I grew up, one of the authors that I read a whole lot of was the science fiction writer Robert Heinlein. And he wrote a book called Starship Troopers. And there's an interesting theory on social participation in that book that I don't agree with exactly the way he put it. But it goes like this, is that that only veterans in his book had the right to vote, that you had to prove that you wanted to support the country by serving the country. And I don't agree that it should just be veterans, but here's my thought. Here's what I think. Let's make a 2-year commitment. And it can be military, it can be Peace Corps, it can be if you're a doctoral student, you can work in an inner city hospital, whatever. You know, we come up with something that anybody could serve. You know, it doesn't have to be military, but you do something for the betterment of our country. And in exchange for that 2 years of service, then you get the right to vote. What do you think about that idea?
I think the right to vote is the right to vote. I don't think that you have to prove yourself to be able to vote. I think the majority of people serve somehow in this country, whether it be volunteer work or they're join the military. But I think a lot of people serve their country in one form or another.
Okay, so let's go back to our previous caller, Kimberly, who was talking about how the American people aren't having a shared sacrifice in this war, and if we're not going to institute a draft, what do you think is going to bring the country around to more strongly opposing this war? No, our previous caller was talking about how we would need something like a draft to get people to have enough shared sacrifice this war.
I don't think that we need that. I think I said this earlier, I'm an Army brat, and... Mm-hmm. My daughter's at West Point. I have a son who's going to the Air Force Academy next year, and I'm very proud of them, and they have chosen to serve their country. I don't think they need to be forced to serve their country.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for your opinion, Julie. Them. Appreciate the call. We got to move on. I got another caller hanging on the line. Phil in Harrison, Tennessee. Phil, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, great, Russ. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I've been listening to all this stuff, you know, about the torture and the this and that and everything. And it makes me more than anything just want to do something myself. You know, we've got Hillary and Barack that are, you know, they're in their contest. We're Democrats. We have to let them finish it hopefully as quickly as possible. So what I started doing is making these homemade looking stickers, the circle with a line through it, like you see on a no smoking sign. And I put John W. McBush.
Okay.
Through it. Now, do you remember how Ron Paul's early campaign looked? You know, they had the homemade look. And you remember how good it looked and how it caught everybody's attention?
Yeah.
I think it would be great if we could get more and more of us who are kind of stuck in neutral here waiting to do something to help our candidate win, whichever one it may be. Heck, it'd give us something to do.
All right, let's do the anti-John W. McBush stickers. I like that idea. Thanks for calling in, Phil. I appreciate the note. And before we end up for the rest of the show here, of course, we want to talk about some of the emails that we receive here at the Russ Belville Show. You can always send us an email at radicalruss@gmail.com. So let's take a look at some emails. Yeah, so it's you cannot play a Monty Python quote without getting the British guy going, can you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. I try every week. I cover my mouth and it just doesn't work. It just comes out anyway.
It's the Monty Python gene. I got an email from a good friend of mine, Adam Graham. He is a conservative blogger out in my home state of Idaho. And we disagree on probably everything, just about everything, politically speaking. But every now and then, Adam brings something to my attention that I think deserves some attention from those of us here on the left. And he sends me an article from Minneapolis, Minnesota, about this academy, the Tarek Ibn Ziyad Academy, which is a K through 8 charter school in Minnesota there. Now, charter schools are public schools, okay? They're running on a charter, but they get government money. And by law, they should not promote or endorse any sort of religion. And it turns out we got some reports here from some of the substitutes that used to work there that said, you know, they have their the ritual washing and the call to prayer and a forced, coerced prayer for all the students, and basically that they're getting away with mixing church and state in this Islamic academy. And so he sends me the note and says, have you covered this? I don't hear a whole lot of people in the left talking about this. And of course, the implication is that, you know, we go crazy whenever they want to bring a Bible in the classroom or have a school prayer like that. So why aren't we going crazy about the Muslim academy? Well, you got it, Adam. I'm going crazy about the Muslim Academy. This is an unconstitutional mixing of church and state. I have no problem with religious schools. You want to have a Catholic school, a Mormon school, an Islamic school, that's fine, so long as it's private and it's getting its money from private sources. The minute we start putting government funding into any of these schools in any way, we need to get away from the religious aspect in that school, and that goes for Islam just as much as it goes for any other religion. So, Adam, I hope you're proud of me. So thanks for listening to the Russ Belville Show today. I want to thank everyone for joining us again. Check out the website, which is RadicalRuss.com. We've got a new website now. It's no longer RadicalRuss.net. It's RadicalRuss.com.
We're moving
completely
up in the world.
Redone site. That's right. Moved up in the world. All of our shows are archived, podcasted up there on the show. Easy to listen to, easy to subscribe to. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on whatever sort of pod player that you got. So check out the website, RadicalRuss.com. You also have a blog there, and you can leave your comments and have further conversation with me and anyone else who wants to read the website. I'm Radical Russ. We'll see you next weekend. Thanks for joining us for Truly Progressive Talk.